Today's shiur is Perek Esra Mehilchos Ishus, Chapter 20 of the Laws Concerning Marriage. Halacha Aleph, Paragraph 1. Tzivu chachamim she'itin adam minachasav mi'at labito, kadesha tinasi bo, v'zehu hanikra parnasam. Our sages ordained that a man should give of his property some of it to his daughter in order that she could get married therewith. And this is what is referred to as parnasa, livelihood or a dowry. Hamasi es bito stam, if one gives his daughter over in marriage without specifying how much he's going to give her, he should not give her anything less than the amount of garments that one gives a poor wife. As we explained earlier, that was in the beginning of chapter 13, he said that a husband who is obligated to provide garments for his wife, if he is poor, should not give less than 50 zuz worth of garments a year. Likewise, the father should not give less than that. However, when does the foregoing apply that he should not give her any less than 50 zuz worth of garments? That is, if the father was poor. However, if the father was wealthy, then it is fit for him to give her according to his wealth. It is noted that the Rambam does not use the term he is obligated, because then it would imply that they could compel him and force him to give according to his capacity. The Rambam just says that it is fit for him, that it is something that he should do. He has a moral obligation, but they can't compel him to do so. Halacha Beis, paragraph 2. Peiresh al habal she'en la klum, v'sheach nisena aruma en la klum. If the father specified to the husband that she will receive nothing and that he should take her into his home without any garments whatsoever, stripped of everything, she then is entitled to nothing. And the husband should not say, well, when she comes to my house, when she moves in, then I will cover her, I will give her her garments. No, the husband is obligated to provide for her garments to cover her when she is still in her father's house. It should be noted that in those days, the first stage of betrothal, of marriage, would take place about a year before the nisuyin, the final stage, in which case the wife would then move in with a husband. So in that period, the husband is still obligated to provide for his wife. Halacha Gimel, paragraph 3. Ha'av shemeis v'niyach bas, omdim dato kama hayibali balitan lo leparnasa. If a father dies leaving a daughter, an estimate should be made of his intention as to the amount he planned to give her for her livelihood, and the same amount should be given to her. How do we know to assess the intention of the father? He's no longer alive. The answer is, we derive this from his friends, his acquaintances, his business transactions, and his dignity. Another way of assessing how much his intention is, if he personally married off another daughter in his lifetime, we then assess the father's intentions based on what he gave his other daughter. And if the court has no way to estimate his intention, the daughter should be given one-tenth of his estate for her livelihood. Halacha Dalet, paragraph 4. Heniach banos rabos kol shetava lehinase nos la isur hanachasim. If a man left many daughters, whoever is ready to get married should be given a tenth of his estate. Bishalachreha isur mashishayra rishona, a tenth of what the first one left over. Bishalachreha isur mashishira shnia, and the next one should be given a tenth of what the second one left over. You don't divide his estate into 10 parts, if there are 10 daughters, let's say, and give each one one-tenth, because that would mean he would give up his entire estate. But you give a tenth of what is left over. What do you do, v'imbo kulan lehinase ka'achas, if they all come to get married simultaneously? If you would give each one a tenth of his estate, that would completely deplete the estate. So the answer is as follows. Rishona notelser, the first one gets a tenth. V'hashniya isur mashashira rishona, the second one gets a tenth of what the first one left over. V'hashlishis isa mashashira shniya, and the third one gets a tenth of what the second one left over. V'achein afilu hein eser, And the same thing would go on even if there are 10 daughters. But this is not really fair, because why should the second daughter get less than the first when they're all getting married at the same time? So the Rambam provides us with the answer, with a solution, in the next sentence. V'chozros, v'cholkos, kol ha'isurim b'shava. And then they go back again, and they divide all of the tenths that they just now allocated for all the daughters, and they divide it evenly. U'shar ha'nechasim la'achim, and the rest of the estate goes to the brothers. Halacha hei, paragraph 5. Isur zeh shehu l'parnasa eino mitznoi k'suba. This tenth that we give for livelihood is not considered to be one of the stipulations of the k'suba that were listed before in chapter 12, such as, for example, the obligation that a husband has to heal his wife if she gets sick, and to ransom her if she is taken captive, and so on and so forth. This obligation to give parnasa, to give a tenth, or whatever the amount happens to be, is not one of the conditions of the ksuba. What difference does that make? The Rambam explains. L'fichach, afilu l'fi takanas chachamim, harishonim v'achronim, eina notelis elemin hakarkam. Even based on the enactment of the later sages, in some editions it had also early sages, even according to all of the enactments of the sages, up until the latter sages, who allowed for collecting the obligations of the ksuba, even from movable property, eina notelis elemin hakarka, she can only collect from real estate, as opposed to the conditions of the ksuba. Because, as we learned before, the Gaonim, the post-Talmudic rabbis, those are the ones the Rambam refers to as the later authorities, they enacted and they allowed a woman to collect her ksuba with all of its stipulations, even from movable objects. This tenth is not in that category, and she can only collect it from karka, from land, from real estate. V'yesh lo ligbos isur zeh mischiras hakarka. She can also collect this tenth out of the rental of this real estate. And if the brothers are willing to pay her money in lieu of the one-tenth of the real estate, that they may do. Halacha Vav, paragraph 6. Habas b'isur zeh kibalas chov shel achen hi. The daughter, in relation to this tenth, is considered like a creditor of the brothers. L'fichach notelus osa min habeninis below shvua. Therefore, she collects it from the average type of real estate or land without having to give an oath. Just like any debtor who has to pay his debt to a creditor in the lifetime of the debtor, they are entitled to collect beninus, the middle or average quality land, without having to give an oath. If the daughter would be considered the creditor of their father, then it would be different. She would only be entitled to collect from the inferior, most inferior quality, and she would have to give an oath. Because since the father is the creditor, and they are the heirs, the orphans, the law is that when you collect from orphans for a debt of the father, it has to be collected only with an oath, and you can only collect from ziburis, the inferior quality real estate. And the Rambam explains, V'im meisu ha'achin, notelus osa min b'nehem, Miziburis ubishvua. However, if the brothers die, now that the brothers are dead, their children in turn are the heirs, and she is collecting from them the debt of their father. So she collects it from their children, her brothers' children, not from the average quality, but from the most inferior quality land, and she also has to give an oath. Shaharehi nifras menichse yisomim. Because she is collecting from the estate of orphans. And the law is that anyone who collects from the estate of orphans can only collect from the most inferior quality land and only with an oath, as will be explained later in a subsequent section called The Laws Concerning Loans. Halacha Zayin, paragraph 7. V'ha'achim shemachru o'mishkinu karka avihem habas torefes min halakuchos panasasa. If the brothers sold or pledged the real estate of their father, the daughter is entitled to collect from the people who purchased the property her livelihood. She's entitled to collect her livelihood from the purchases, just as the law is concerning all creditors who are entitled to collect the debts from the people who purchase mortgage property, as will be explained in the laws concerning loans. Halacha Ches, paragraph 8. Mi shehisi banos gedolos, v'nisher oktanos umeis belobein, ein notum parnaso luktanos, v'achakacholkis hanachasim, elacholkos kulam b'shava. If a man who had given his adult daughters in marriage, so that only his minor daughters remain unmarried, and this man dies without leaving a son, now we do not deduct first the livelihoods of the minor daughters, and then divide the residual estate, or all that's left over, as we would do if there would be a son, but rather we divide the entire estate equally between them. There's no difference between the daughters that are already married and those who are not married. In other words, we don't really apply the law of parnassa, of giving money for livelihood, to the daughters that are married, because that is only done when there are sons. And since the daughters don't inherit anything, you give them this type of payment. However, in the case where there are no sons, the daughters do inherit everything. So why should it be any difference? All the daughters should inherit equally. Halacha Tes, paragraph 9. Misha meis, v'hiniach shtei banos ubein, v'kadma rishana v'natla isa nechasim, v'lo hespika hashenis ligbos, ad shemeis habein, v'natla kol nechasim l'shteihen, ein hashniya notelis isur, elacholkos b'shava, v'zachsa harishana b'isa shalom. A man who dies, and he leaves two daughters and a son. The first daughter hastened to take the tenth of the property for her parnasa, for the livelihood, but the second daughter did not yet have a chance to collect her tenth by the time the son died, and now that the son is dead and there are no other children, the entire estate is inherited by both of them. The second one is no longer entitled to a tenth, but on the other hand, what they do is they divide everything that's left over evenly, equally, and the first daughter, who already took possession and collected her tenth, she has the right to keep it, because that she already got before she was entitled to the inheritance, when there was still a son. Now that there is no longer a son, and they're entitled to the inheritance, that's what you do to the rest of the estate. Halacha Yud, paragraph 10. Mi shetziva b'shas misa, al tefarnus benosa minachasai, shomim lo, she'ein ze mitzno iksuba. A man who gives an order at the time of his death, don't provide my daughters for my estate their livelihood. We do listen to him because this is not one of the conditions of the ksuba. This is a debt that is on the orphans, but it is not an obligation of the father. And therefore, it is something that the father is not really obligated personally. And if he says that they shouldn't support and give the livelihood to his daughters, the debt is not theirs. They no longer have any such debt. Halacha Yud Aleph. Mi shemeis v'niach almana ubas, kvar b'yanu shemezonas ha'almana kodin lemezonas habas. If one dies and he leaves a widow and a daughter, we already explained, that was in chapter 19, that the food that one has to give the widow from the estate takes precedence to the food that one must give the daughter. V'chein im niseis habas, eina notelis isu nechasin b'pnei mezonas ha'almana. Similarly, if the daughter is married, she may not take one-tenth of the estate because of the obligation that the estate has to provide the food for the widow. And even if the daughter dies after she got married, the husband could not inherit the livelihood that was fit to be given to her. And the reason is, as the Rambam continues, Shaharei hanachasim kulam becheskes ha'almana, shetein nizonus mehen, because the entire estate is presumed to be liable for the maintenance, for feeding the widow, and none of it can be taken by the daughter or by her husband. Halacha Yud Beis, paragraph 12. Ketana yisoma shesi'ata ima o achia l'daita, v'nas l'mei o'chamishim zuz, a minor girl who's an orphan who doesn't have a father, and instead her mother or her brothers married her off to someone with her consent, and then they gave her 100 or 50 zuz. Yecholehi mishatagdi lahotzi miyadam parnasa haruyala. When she becomes of age, she has the authority to recover from them the livelihood that is fitting for her. What is that? O ba'umdan dasa av. Either we go according to what the father's intention would have been by estimating it, or by giving her a tenth of the real estate, in the event that we don't know what the father's intentions would have been. This applies even if the brothers did not provide her with her food. And even though she had not protested at the time of the marriage, that does not make any difference. Because since she was a minor is incapable, is considered incapable, of lodging a protest. So the fact that she did not protest does not mean that she waived her rights, and therefore she is still entitled to her parnasa. However, the Rambam continues in Halacha Yud Gimel, paragraph 13, Niseis Habas Achasha Gadla, if the daughter got married after she became of age, after she is an adult, Bein Naira Bein Bogeris, whether she is a Naira, that means at the age of 12, when she is considered an adult, Bein Bogeris, whether she is already fully developed, that's the age of 12 and a half, Velo Tava Parnasasa, and she still did not collect or demand her livelihood of the Parnasasa, she then loses her rights to be given this livelihood from the father's estate. Because the fact that an adult is silent, that means that she waived her rights. However, if, however, she did protest at the time of her marriage, then she has the right to collect whatever is fitting for her as long as she wants. If the girl comes of age while still in her father's house, whether she does so after his death or before it, the rule is as follows. If when her brothers cease to provide her with maintenance, since she is not entitled to it, as we have explained earlier, she remains silent and did not demand her livelihood, she forfeits her livelihood as well. If she did protest, she does not forfeit it. As we learned before, the condition of the ksuba stipulates that the daughter should be provided with food from the estate of their father after he dies until either they become betrothed or until they become of age. That's 12 and a half. In this case, therefore, since she has become of age, she is no longer entitled to mizonos. However, she is still entitled to this parnasa, to livelihood. However, if she did not protest, she was silent and does not demand her livelihood, she then loses it, she forfeits it. However, if she did protest, if she complained, as she becomes of age, she does not lose it. Lo paska ha'achim mizono seha, mizono osa babeger, afa pisha lo machsa, lo avda parnasasa, kolz man shehim zanim osa. If the brothers did not cease providing her with food, even after she becomes of age, that is, they do so out of their own good free will. They're not obligated to do so, as we learned before. Even if she does not protest, and she does not demand that she be given her parnasa, she does not forfeit her parnasa, her livelihood, as long as they're providing her with food. And the reason is, the rationale behind this is, as the Rambam continues, sheyesh lo liton, mipnei shehem zanim osa, af al pi she'enem chayavim, v'hi adayin lo niseis, mipnei ze lo tava parnasasa. She can say as follows. She can argue because they are feeding her, even though they're not obligated to do so, and she has not yet gotten married. That is the reason why she did not claim her parnasa, her livelihood, because she was ashamed to. Since they're so nice to her and they're giving her food when they're not even obligated to do so, she does not feel comfortable asking them for the parnasa, but she did not really waive her rights, and therefore she's still entitled to it. Halacha Yudalad, paragraph 14, and the final halacha of chapter 20. Mi shetziva lasis labito kach v'kach moas leparnasasa likach behen karka. A man who commands that his daughter be given so much and so much money for her livelihood in order to purchase with them real estate. Bein shehaya shchiv mira, bein shehaya bari. Whether he was a sick man, his deathbed, whether he was healthy. Umeis, and the man dies. And now the money is in the hands of a trustee, of a third person. Give it to my husband. Give the money to my husband. And whatever he wants to do, he will do with them. If she was an adult and she got married, then she has the right to do this. Because obviously the father's intention was to give it in the hands of the trustee only until she gets married. And once she gets married, the husband has the right to enjoy the fruits, the profits of her estate, of her property. V'im adayin moreses hi. However, if she is still betrothed and she did not go through the final stage of marriage, in which the husband enjoys the fruit and the profits of her estate, yase sholish mashahushlish biyado. The trustee must do what he was commanded to do. Since he was told to invest the money in real estate, he must do so, and he does not give it to the husband. V'im adayin ktanahi. However, if she's still a minor when this happens, I feel in this case, even if she did get married, that means she goes through the final stage of marriage, ain shomin lo, we don't pay any attention to her when she says that it should go to her husband. The trustee must do with it as the father commanded to purchase real estate with it, because this is for her own benefit, that the husband will not be able to take the money and spend it and perhaps lose the money. And if she says, I trust my husband that he won't do anything with it that's not in my benefit, then the law is that we still do not give it to him, because the father ordered the money be used to purchase real estate, and therefore that is what is to be done with it. As far as the case where she's married, and then we say that we do give it to her and her husband, and the trustee does not have to buy real estate with it, the reason there is because we understand that the father, when he gave it to the trustee, only meant that he should hold it in trust until she gets married. And since she is already married, she is entitled to take it and give it to her husband, so the husband can benefit from the profits of the estate. With this, the Rambam concludes, Perek Esrim Mehilchos Ishus, Chapter 20 of the Laws Concerning Marriage.